In my last episode, the episode after New Year's Eve, I talked about glow sticks in light of the ban on fireworks where I live. Several episodes before, I talked about fireworks. In both cases, color was at the center of the episode, but they all just touched on one facet of the topic. This episode, I want to dedicate to another, and if I'm correct, the last big contributor to different colors to the naked eye. Their existence has a lot of implications, many more than only color, but in this case, we shall concentrate on the color part. Not that you could have guessed that from my ramblings, but today I'm going to talk about the so-called conjugated systems. My name is Johannes Vogel, and you're listening to Chemistry in Everyday Life, my podcast where I explain the chemistry that happens all around us in layman's terms. Chemistry is the study of the attributes and changes that substances can undergo, no matter if they're gases, liquids, or solids. And believe me when I tell you that this happens everywhere around us at this very moment. Imagine the following scene. A young researcher at a renowned British university stands in the chemistry lab. Dressed appropriately in a lab coat that, for all intents and purposes, can only be described as off-white, or maybe beige, with some splashes of something or other on it. The glories of a pristine white lab coat long gone. It has been the best part of 2 intense weeks for this young man to get to this point. There's a publication deadline looming, and he's about 2 to 3 chemical reactions away from completing his synthesis, his making of the chosen target compound. It is intense, because this reaction is a point at which everything should fall into place. The reactions afterwards are not too technical, so if this works, we're pretty much done. To the uninitiated, all one can see is a clear liquid in a round-bottomed flask, stirring while the chemist adds another clear liquid to the mixture. He doesn't really expect anything visual to happen, because it never does. Organic synthetic chemists typically chase clear, viscous oils or white powders. But in this case, already on the first drop hitting the liquid, it goes from clear to bright orange. I cannot tell you exactly what the facial expression was of this student, because it was me and I didn't look in the mirror at the time, but I thought, oh no, oh man, what? Why? Oh come on, that's not good. Then I started sweating a little, thinking that all that hard work, all these 2 weeks, all that was for nothing. Again. By the way, a common occurrence in chemical research, doing all for nothing. It happens quite a lot of times. But then I looked at the chemical structure that I wrote down on paper again, and I realized, oh, all right, I formed a conjugated system. Ha! Hey guys, come over. Look at this. How cool is that? Well, this little anecdote is meant to explain 2 things. 1, chemical research can be quite frustrating, as shown by the reaction of said young man. This work got a publication in the end, by the way. Very importantly, however, 2, in organic chemistry, color really isn't anything that happens overly often. Inorganic chemists have much more fun that way. Which is all the more reason to understand why color happens in these conjugated systems. By the way, if you're wondering, organic chemistry is the chemistry revolving around materials that contain the main elements carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen, sometimes a bit of sulfur and phosphorus. Anything else only rarely, and metals virtually never, only in reagents. But what are conjugated systems? Well, first off, what is color? As mentioned in so many episodes already, color is effectively the perception of our eyes that can pick up different wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. It is only a very narrow band ranging from about 400 nanometers to about 700 nanometers. And that spans all the colors that we know, from red to orange, yellow, green, blue, and then finally violet. And then it goes into the non-visible spectrum, which is known as ultraviolet light or UV light. There are two ways of looking at color. With colored light, you have something called additive coloring, which essentially means if you add all wavelengths together, what you see is white light. That's just brightness. Maybe you've seen this already. Point a red beam, a green beam, and a blue beam on the same spot on a white surface, and what you get is white. It's really cool, actually. And as far as I know, that's the basis of things like television, but I did not look this up. And where there's additive, there's also subtractive coloring with dyes and pigments. Essentially, dyes filter out wavelengths. And when you mix enough dyes together, you end up with black, because all light is absorbed and filtered. So, for example, when you look at leaves on a tree, the reason they're green is because the chlorophyll and other compounds in the leaves absorb light and all other visible wavelengths to harness the energy and grow. As a side note, the reason leaves turn yellow and red in autumn is because the chlorophyll breaks down. Long story short, color is effectively electromagnetic radiation at an energy level that produces wavelengths that the receptors in our eyes can pick up. So we always have to check how is light at a specific wavelength either given off by a compound, or how is light of a specific wavelength filtered out of the complete spectrum. To put this now into context with conjugated systems, let's have a look at what they are. We are looking at organic substances here. I mentioned it before, these are the substances using mainly the elements carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen, plus at times sulfur or phosphorus. And the way that atoms of these elements bind strongly to each other is, most of the time, through something called a covalent bond. Now, as always, let's look behind that word and look at what it describes. Another good way of describing how these atoms bind together to form complex molecular structures, such as, skin or the chlorophyll in the leaves of a tree, is by saying that two atoms that are bound to each other share electrons. This is really it. The elements that I mentioned earlier, carbon, hydrogen, and so on, through sharing electrons, they themselves are more stable. So that is what they do. They look for stability. And the more electrons they share with another atom, the more tightly and rigidly bound are they to each other. This is the basis of a covalent bond. In a conjugated system, something rather strange happens. Well, you may call it strange. I call it exciting, actually. A group of atoms arranged, quite often arranged in circles, such as six-membered rings, where each corner is a carbon atom. So a group of atoms arranges itself to share electrons to form these bonds. But what they actually do is not just share some electrons between two atoms. No, no. They share it across the entire group, so that you have these, for lack of a better term, clouds of electrons above and below these typically flat structures. And this gives them a much greater stability. Granted, this is a very abstract concept, and if you find it hard to grasp, that is okay. The main thing I want to get to is the cloud of electrons above and below, because this is the source of the color change. So if you can accept that there are structures who are almost communist in nature, and that they share their goods, the electrons, with an entire group of other atoms, and every other atom does it too, then I have achieved my goal. Because, as the electrons whiz around these orbitals along the atoms, they can actually capture, meaning absorb, electromagnetic radiation of a certain energy. And the larger the conjugated system, the lower the energy needed by the photon to be absorbed. So if we look at very small conjugated systems, they will appear white if they are solid, or clear if they are liquid, because they only really absorb in the ultraviolet spectrum, the one with the highest energy that we cannot see with the naked eye. But as they grow larger, they may start filtering out also the violet and blue portion of the visible spectrum. Violet and blue are the visible colors with the highest energy. So what color do you get when you remove the blue portion of the visible color spectrum? Anyone wants to hazard a guess? The answer is, drum roll please, the color yellow. So what I am saying is that the electrons, the so-called delocalized electrons, the ones in the clouds, because they have no specific atom they belong to, so what I'm saying here is that their action of absorbing light is effectively causing subtractive coloring. So, in very broad strokes, this is how it works, okay? This absorption of different wavelengths in the high energy spectrum. And the understanding of this effect has led to a great variety of different dyes and pigments. The difference between these two terms, dyes and pigments, revolves around solubility, by the way. Pigments are typically insoluble, while dyes are soluble in a liquid. Anyways, so based on this knowledge of conjugated systems, it was possible to develop various different dyes, such as the azo dyes that have a very specific structure that can be modulated quite nicely to achieve different colors, while staying stable for a long time. A very special case that I recently stumbled across are the so-called leucodyes that can switch between a highly conjugated system and two separate smaller systems. The consequence is quite exciting. One form is colored and the other is colorless. Can you guess where I came across this? It's magic ink. This is one of many, many versions of magic ink. Especially for young children, we bought some toy from a child to play with stamps that only become colored when pressed onto the special magic paper. I gotta say, that was very cool. I was trying to figure out how they did it, so I looked for heat, pressed the paper, all sorts, until I finally figured out that the contact of the ink with the paper triggers this formation of a conjugated system. I gotta say, I really annoyed my daughter that way. But yeah, anyways guys, I hope this was reasonably clear how conjugated systems work and how they filter out certain wavelengths to create color, if you will. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you in the next. If you have comments or ideas for new topics, please leave comments on Twitter under @chemistryandeve1 or write directly to me under chem.podcast@gmail.com. If this was too fast to write down, I left the information in the show notes as usual. Also, if you liked what you listened to, please rate my show on the podcast platform of your choice. Thanks a lot and take care, folks. You've been listening to Chemistry in Everyday Life, a podcast about chemistry that happens all around us, explained in layman's terms. Thank you for listening.